This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, where I blog, and my podcast, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, has been going for 8 years there, and I do archive this show at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, and that's 9 to 10 Eastern, and everything in between on the BBS radio network. If you would like to participate during the show with questions or comments for the guest, you can call toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. This is a very special show tonight, like every show is. Our guest tonight is Sam Kaplinka. Sam Kaplinka Lair. You're probably the only person on Facebook with that name or Twitter. So, Sam, welcome to The People Speak with me, Cindy Sheehan.
Thank you, Cindy. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you. So this show tonight is about war tax resistance. And tell my listeners a little bit about yourself before we get into the subject.
Great. Well, it's an honor to be here. And again, my name is Sam Kaplinka Lair, and I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I am a community organizer. I work part-time doing organizing on a variety of issues, everything from war tax resistance that we'll get into to supporting prisoners who are on the inside, working with local chapters that are fighting against police brutality here in the city. And then, you know, I also, in my other job, I work as a nanny and a child care provider, working with two young kids. So it's a mixed life, you know, and I have a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. So you do work for the National War Tax Resisters Coordinating Committee. Are you yourself a war tax resister?
I am. Yep.
And why did you decide to go? Everybody wants to know. This is such an interesting subject for most people. Most people can't even imagine not paying their income taxes. It's a very scary proposition. And I've had many shows on this subject because I just want to, you know, inspire other people to do the same, but also to answer people's real questions and real fears, right, about the IRS, because it's seen as this big, scary, heartless entity. So what made you decide to be a war tax resister?
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly what needs to be told, is people's stories of resistance. So thanks for your leadership in sharing those stories. Just to, a little bit about my story is that I grew up with people in my life who were war tax resistors. So I guess I'm a second generation tax resistor. You know, my first introduction to taxes was actually from my aunt, Mary Lair, who's a big inspiration in my life. And my first introduction to what taxes were was from people who wouldn't pay them, because it was going to the police, because it was going to prisons, because it was going to trillion-dollar wars overseas. You know, this was, you know, I'm 25 years old. When I was in elementary and middle school learning about these things, you know, the United States had just entered an illegal war in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, targeting brown people, Arabs overseas. That, you know, I thought was unjust. That was, in my mind, an illegal war, and I didn't want to pay for it as soon as I was able to make enough money that I was actually taxed. And so that's when I started refusing, because of all the many ways in which our government acts, particularly as a white supremacist, violent institution.
Well, how do you go about that? And how, I think probably after the break, I'll tell my story, because a lot of people always want to know about my story of war tax resistance. But how do you go about it, and how have your interactions with the IRS gone?
Right. So for those who are listening in, there are many different ways that people choose to resist. And this time especially, a lot of more folks are kind of waking up and seeing the government for what it is, and wanting to start resisting. And for those who are listening in, we have a series of webinars coming up, and you can tune in online and learn a little bit about the actual process of war tax resistance. So definitely check that out on our website. And for me personally, I've done both filing taxes and not filing taxes. But the majority of my time has been filing taxes, and publicly stating to the IRS and publicly stating in newspapers and in my community the reasons why I'm refusing to pay taxes. So I calculate out how much I owe for that year, and then I publicly refuse to pay that amount. Other war tax resistors do it differently, but that's the way that I generally have done my resistance.
Well, you're from Philadelphia. So Philadelphia has the Quaker, you know, the Quaker background. And many Quakers have been war tax resistors.
Yep. Yeah. And my family actually has Mennonite history to it, in terms of our the practice in my immediate family, and so that's some of the kind of religious practice that it's drawn from. Is there's a great saying, which is, if you pray for peace, stop paying for war.
Right, exactly. So talk a little bit about the National War Tax Resistors Coordinating Committee. Let's just say that we're going to start calling it NUTRIC, so we don't have to say National War Tax Resistors Coordinating Committee every time we want to talk about it. And they have a decades long background of war tax resistance. So can you talk really as much as you want about that?
Yeah. So along with having a very long acronymed name, NUTRIC has supported war tax resistors for actually almost 35 years now. We were founded in 1982, and a lot of our work has been supporting people who refuse to pay taxes, refuse to pay because of the moral and ethical concerns with how that money is being spent. And so really encouraging people to take direct action with their money and refuse to pay for these systems of oppression. And my work with NUTRIC is twofold. One is, as I said, kind of supporting people who have been in the network. And then another one is really about building relationships with other movements, and particularly movements that are targeted by state-sponsored violence. So movements like Black Lives Matter, movements fighting deportations, movements against war in other countries. When we think about the ways in which war and the U.S. military impacts women and femmes, people who identify openly as female. So those really are the ways in which I'm now trying to build those connections, that we need to be more connected and have a stronger movement than ever before, because we're all being targeted in different ways, and some more than others with overlapping oppressions, but we really need to be building solidarity and strength between our resistance communities. So that's a lot of the work that I've been doing lately.
You know, that's good, because in my tangential relationship with NUTRIC, I haven't seen that much, because a lot of war tax resistors really, they plan their lives to fly under the radar, not to be as open, and courageous. I'm not saying that war tax resistors aren't courageous. They are, no matter if they fly above the radar or below the radar, but as open and public, I should say, as public as you are with your resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's really the key is, at least for as far as I see it, is the more public that we can be in really supporting and showing up for other movements, the more that we can actually really raise these issues to the forefront. One little just kind of snippet that I like to share is, you know, if and actually Wally Nelson, a longtime war tax resisters from Massachusetts, said something along these lines many years ago, is if somebody came to my door and suggested that we lock up millions of black and brown people and we shoot them down in the streets and we declare war on countries overseas, predominantly black and brown countries overseas, and they wanted me to help pay for it, you know, people would recognize that as for what it is, a white supremacist violent institution. And in reality, that's what our government is doing. But because, you know, we've been so brainwashed into not challenging these systems of oppression and not really seeing ourselves as complicit in that, I'm speaking, you know, especially as a white person here, then it's taken for granted. It's taken for granted as an institution. And so really, the more public that I can be in my resistance and building connections and solidarity with other movements, I really see that as what we need to be doing during this time, calling out the injustices for what they are.
Well, and I've often said too in my talks about war tax resistance, it's like if Bush or Obama or Trump like came to my door and said, will you write me a $10,000 check so I can go torture some people?
Right, exactly.
I actually go like, no, right, I won't be exactly doing that. So it's just like that's what's happening. Your hard-earned money is going to the government to do mostly things that we wouldn't approve of. I say often, too, it's like if one of my kids came up and said, Mom, can you like loan me $100 so I could go buy some crack? Or can you give me $100 so I can go buy some crack? And I say, I don't approve of crack, but here's $100, you right know, or whatever. Right. It's just getting people thinking about these issues. Or what if the government started a GoFundMe page for war?
Right.
How many people would be going, oh, yeah, you know, hit me up. I'll donate to your GoFundMe page for war. What right kind of response do you get from the other movements like Black Lives Matter and the, you know, the anti-police and anti-prison movements? When you go do outreach with them, what kind of response do you get from? And I see the Black Lives Matter movement as mostly young people. What are the young people, what do they say to you when you talk to them about these issues?
Right. So I guess first off is, you know, when I show up and, you know, in general, I think what we need to be doing is showing up for their movement. You know, I'm not showing up and trying to get folks in Black Lives Matter to become more tax resistors. I'm showing up to support and be in the streets and actually be there when shit gets rough.
I don't know if we can cuss on this show, but the engineer can bleep it out if it doesn't work.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And so that's, I think, first and foremost, what I want to say is really that we need to stop showing up with kind of this mentality of, oh, I want them, you know, somebody else to come to my movement, you know. Mm-hmm. We really need to be showing up to support the struggles that are happening on the ground. So that's really what I'm showing up first and foremost. And then there's a big initiative that we have right now. And actually, there have been folks with the Movement for Black Lives who helped draft the policy platform, who have been providing some input on it. And we just launched it, which is trying to get war tax resistors to redirect their tax dollars to resistance that's led by Black folks, Brown folks, and Indigenous people. And really, this is our kind of a big call to action across the country right now. And the goal is really to transfer resources to organizers that are doing fierce resistance work on the ground every single day. But because of, you know, the systems of white supremacy operate not only to directly target them, but also to make sure that they have no funding to do their work. Oftentimes, Black organizers here in Philly have been doing years and years of organizing unpaid, and, you know, have all these things going on in their personal lives, or struggling with not being able to pay rent, all these different pieces. And that really, you know, especially white folks need to be thinking about how do we transfer resources, money, to Black, Brown, Indigenous organizers who are doing amazing organizing work that's underfunded and undersupported. And really this, so that's our big project right now. And so that's one of the projects that I've been kind of thinking about. How do we build solidarity between these movements? Is that War Tax Resistance is positioned to actually do a pretty amazing radical act, which is take money from a white supremacist institution, the U.S. government, and give that money to Black, Brown, Indigenous people that are resisting that institution and working for liberation. So that's one of the big projects that we've been working on, and it's been, a lot of folks are really excited about it. Folks across the board are excited about it. War Tax Resistors, people in other movements are really excited about this initiative. I mean, if you want to learn more, you can contact me or go on our website as well and check it out.
Or that sounds like a great, is that something that like War Tax Resistors or people who are investigating it, is that something that they would like donate to Nutrick and then Nutrick would disperse it? Or usually I see War Tax Resistors just doing those kinds of things on their own.
Right. Great question. So the, at our national gathering, that happened down in Florida in November, we talked about this in some detail, and what we decided was that it really makes sense to do exactly what you said, which is to have local groups of war tax resistors coordinate this in their community. And it's really about the local relationships. So here in Philadelphia, the relationships that I have, the relationships that other people have with specifically Black-led organizations is our focus here in the city. That's who we're redirecting the money to, the Philadelphia Coalition for Real Justice, as well as the Black and Brown Workers Collective. And so each community, really, the goal is for you to be thinking about what are the organizations, the Black, Brown, Indigenous organizations, that are, that's doing work towards liberation in your area, and what are those relationships that you can build and really support that work. And it's not perfect, but it's about how do we each do this in our own area. And then Nutrick as a whole is going to coordinate to really do some publicity around how much was redirected in total and kind of be in touch with each area.
Right. That's an amazing, you know, service to war tax resistors or people who want to be war tax resistors who are fearful of, you know, fearful of coming in contact in a negative way with the IRS. Sam, some war tax resistors, like they figure out how much money goes towards the military industrial complex, and then they withhold that amount of taxes and then maybe put it to an escrow fund. I've seen some funds that are managed by war tax resistors, and then they disperse that money yearly to you know, people like you're talking about, nonprofits who need the money. Is that conflicting with this new initiative?
No, I wouldn't say it's conflicting. It's about, you know, we want all of this and more. You know, we're definitely talking to the alternative funds and the escrow, mm-hmm. people who are in charge of the escrow account, encouraging them to think about this initiative and take it on in their communities. But, you know, it's about people making the decisions for themselves about what's right. You know, that's what war tax resistance is. You know, it's not, we're not trying to have this be top down. You need to do this now.
Right, really, right. I've never seen it that way.
Right, exactly.
Maybe it could be more organized, a little more organized. And I'm glad to see you involved in it to, you know, do this outreach and organization more.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the goal, is for people to really be engaging with this, you know, and thinking about white supremacy and all of its different forms, you know, and as it relates to militarism. So that's really the goal, is for people to kind of wrestle with it and mm-hmm. think about it in their own area. You know, not that people have to do this, but it's that it's one avenue that we're kind of encouraging people to think about their work.
Well, we have about 7 more minutes before the break. And I see a lot of libertarians, they say that income taxes are illegal and I should be fighting it based on the fact that they're illegal. My answer is always, I use my money to support causes I believe in, and I don't use my money to support things I don't believe in, like, you know, the things that we've already talked about. But if I had a society that wasn't white supremacist, like you said, wasn't racist, wasn't imperialist, wasn't capitalist, was a society that cared about people and put everybody's needs, not just the 1%, but everybody's needs ahead of war and all these other oppressions, I would be happy. I would be thrilled to pay my share at that point.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Right.
What do you say to people when they say, oh, income taxes are illegal, blah, blah, blah? I've never seen anybody win when they go and fight based on that, that the income tax is illegal.
Right. Yep.
What do you say to people when they say, I'm sure you hear that all the time, since you're such a out in the forefront of war tax resistance.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, I think you said it very well, in that war tax resistors, and how it differs from kind of the libertarian approach, is that we actually want to be putting that money towards building the communities that we want. We want that money to go towards people having their basic needs met, you know, empowered communities free of oppression. And really, yeah, so that's the key difference. In terms of whether or not income tax is illegal, I actually generally don't get into that. You know, it doesn't seem like that's the fight in my mind. When for me, it's about that what the rule of law is always changing in order to maintain oppression. You know, there are lots of things that are technically legal, that are very, very oppressive, that are hurting people and killing people in the streets. So, you know, I don't get into the, you know, is income tax legal or illegal argument very often.
It's amazing that it happens to me so often. You know, I guess maybe I have too much contact with some libertarians. I don't have any idea. But so I had another point I was going to make before. I can't think of it right now. I'm a terrible host. So we're going to go to the break pretty soon. But like I said, after the break, I want to share my story a little bit. And maybe you might have some comments or questions for me about my story. But I think a lot more people would be war tax resistors if they weren't so afraid of the IRS.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just on that note, that's what our organization does, is support people who want to act to try and challenge the way in which our money is spent in this country. And so the first thing that I did when I was becoming a war tax resistor is I contacted Newtrick, and I sent an email to the coordinator, and it was that support made a huge difference, knowing that there are tens of thousands of people who are doing this every single year. It made a really big difference, and that I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with lots of other comrades in this struggle, people who are refusing to pay for this oppressive and violent system.
And then, of course, I get attacked by people saying that I don't pay my fair share. I'm, you know, shirking my responsibilities. But, you know, I just try to, you know, calmly explain to people that there's many other ways of supporting your community besides funding war.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's where the redirection comes in, you know, and that. For the most part, what war tax resistors do is when they refuse taxes to the U.S. government, they redirect that money to their communities.
Do you think that how many people do you think it would take to be war tax resistors to actually have an impact on empire and 1,000 military bases around the world and at least 8 countries being bombed by the United States right now.
Mm-hmm. I think that we actually already are making a difference.
I'm not saying that we're not making a difference, but
right.
to stop, to actually for people to sit up and notice and say, we you know, we're going broke. We can't afford these wars anymore.
Right. That's a good question. My goal is that, you know, we would have millions and millions of people who are practicing war tax resistance and redirecting that money to causes for peace and social justice.
And not just saying we're not scofflaws. We're actually, we're standing up for our principles, for our beliefs, and for billions of people around the world.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful thing, you know, is people taking that direct action with their money to actually build the world that they want, you know, and divest from the world that they don't want. You know, it's really a powerful thing, you know, in terms of how many people, I don't know. You know, I don't know if war tax resistance necessarily is going to get to the point it needs to be to do that. But I think that the beautiful piece of it is that it's directly challenging the funding stream of these systems of oppression and putting that money instead into building our communities the way that we want them. And so just by itself, I think it's a very radical act that's building the world that we want. But to truly challenge the military industrial complex, we're going to need a lot more. So if you're listening, you know,
get a hold of Sam.
One of the many. That...
Well, Sam Kaplinka-Lair, it's time for a break. Well, stay tuned with us, Sam, and everybody who's listening. And this is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to The People Speak. And we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak on the BBS Radio Network. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and we've been speaking to Sam Kaplinka-Lehr from the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, so I'll tell my story about war tax resistance, and because I did come face-to-face with the IRS, and I'm still here to talk about it. I'm not chained to a wall, you know, in some dungeon somewhere. But when my son was killed in Iraq in 2004, let me go back a little bit further. In the 90s, I went to UCLA, and I was a returning student. I was in my 30s. I had four children. And when I was at UCLA, I started studying American literature, and I started studying especially Henry David Thoreau, and I begged my husband Pat to sell everything and move to the woods and stop participating in the society. Already back then, I didn't want to, you know, use my money to pay for things that I didn't agree with. I didn't want my children to end up like what happened to Casey. And so my ex-husband, he's my ex-husband, he wasn't as venturous as me. So he didn't want to sell everything and move to the woods. But then Casey joined the military in 2000. He was 21 years old. He had already completed a junior college degree. So he was promised in by a recruiter that he would get his bachelor's degree paid for and that he would be able to earn it while he was in the military. So he joined, and, you know, we're just a working class family. We weren't rich. He was the oldest child. He thought that that was one way to help, you know, relieve some of the financial burden on the family was to join the military. And so he was killed in Iraq in 2004, and I looked at his dad, who I was still married to, and I said, he was killed after we had already filed our 2004 taxes. And I looked at Pat, and I said, I don't care what you say, I'm never paying another dime to the United States government. They lied to our son. They lied to us. They're lying to the country. They are responsible for the deaths of millions of people in wars, and I never wanted to pay them. And I realized that I have been funding for all of my adult life, I had been funding the institution that killed our own son. So I said, I'm not going to pay my taxes anymore. And so my ex-husband was not on board with that. And we split up before 2005 anyway, before our taxes were due. And so I'm like, I don't file. I don't even like give any information to the United States government. But in 2005 and 2006, it was right after Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas. And I had many speaking engagements where I was going to universities. I was getting paid, you know, like between $5,000 and $10,000 every time I spoke at a university. I sold a book, and so I got book fees, which were all reported to the IRS. And so a few years after I didn't file, I got like this bill for $100,000 from the IRS. And I was like, oh, how did you come up with that much money? And so I just like ignored it, because I didn't ignore it publicly. Publicly, I was, you know, writing about being a war tax resister. I was talking about being a war tax resister everywhere I went. I was using almost every penny that I made to fund my travels, to, fund my organization, Gold Star Families for Peace, and then to fund Cindy Sheehan's soapbox and my activism and other, activists and organizations also. I was helping to fund almost every penny I was getting was going right back into the movement. And it was in 2011 or 12. I don't see it. This is how much I pay attention. 2011 or 2012, I got in a summons. As a matter of fact, I was having coffee with another activist at a local restaurant here in Vacaville, and one of the news channels from Sacramento came and found me at the restaurant, and they wanted to interview me about my summons from the federal government, from the IRS. And he showed me the summons on his BlackBerry. He was like, look, you, I was like, I got summons by the federal government. I didn't even know about it. And so they had apparently been trying to serve me, but they were never able to find me. And so I was summoned to a hearing in Sacramento at the federal building. And that's when I got a hold of Nutrick. I got a hold of Ruth Ban, who's a national coordinator. And I said, Ruth, I'm sorry I never contacted you before, but I knew you were there and I support what you're doing. I assume you know that I'm a war tax resister. And I got summoned from the IRS. And so they put me in touch with the attorney they work for. I'm not sure I can say his name on the air. I think you know who I'm talking about, the attorney who helps them. Yeah. And another attorney from San Francisco who's not a tax attorney, but who's an attorney for activists and who represented Judy Berry. Do you know Judy Berry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He represented her in her lawsuit against the city of Oakland when they tried to kill her. And so anyway, Dennis Cunningham represented me at the hearing with the IRS. And at the federal court in Sacramento. And the IRS claimed that it wasn't a political persecution against me, but they sent 4 U.S. attorneys from Washington, D.C. To my hearing, my tax hearing. Wow. In Sacramento. And they, we do actually have U.S. attorneys here in California and, at the federal court, that they didn't have to send them from Washington, D.C. And so it was really amazing. The hearing was really amazing. The U.S. attorneys were trying to force me to comply with the IRS. And by comply, they wanted me to share my assets or whatever, which I don't have. Uh-huh. But they wanted all my information and they wanted me to file and things like that. And Dennis Cunningham, my attorney, got up and gave a brilliant statement. I didn't speak at this hearing, but he gave a brilliant statement saying, that my life was in service to my community and to humanity. And the reason why I didn't pay taxes was I oppose what the money goes for. And he was allowed to talk about all the wars that were happening at the time and all the oppression of my son being killed and how my son was killed in a war that was based on lies and based on just for profit, for oil, for resource control, for empire and things like that. And so after Dennis was finished speaking, the magistrate who was presiding over my hearing looked directly at me. He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "That sounds like a real reasonable response to something that happened to you that was so unreasonable."
Wow.
I know. Really, I almost pooped in my pants when he said that to me. And so the attorney, the U.S. attorney, kind of like just sat down and she goes, "Your Honor, will you compel her to comply with us?" And he goes, "Oh, I have about 45 days to give you my answer." He goes, "But I'm just going to tell you, no, I'm not going to make her comply with you." And wow. Then he goes, "It's lunchtime. Court's adjourned."
Wow.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? And wow. I went out to the press. There were press there. And I said, I had tears coming out of my eyes. I said, "This is the first time anybody in this government has acknowledged that what happened to me was unreasonable."
Right.
And so the IRS has put a lien on my Social Security number, even though we have no idea where they got $100,000 from, you know, that I owe them. But basically, and my revenue agent, like you were talking about, you very publicly state that you're not, you know, this is how much you owe, but you're not going to pay. And why? My revenue agent told my attorney, "Why does she have to be so vocal about it?" And he said, and my attorney said, "Because it's a cause. You know, it's something she believes in. It's, you know, do you know Cindy Sheehan?" She's like vocal about everything. And so I understand that there has been very few prosecutions since the Vietnam War for war tax resisters. I understand. And, you know, obviously I'm not an attorney. Obviously we can't give legal advice, but Newtrick does have a really awesome attorney that helps them and helps them with resistors to advise them on things like this. What I understand that there has been very few war tax resistors that have had to spend any time in prison. But Sam, it's like, I tell people, would you rather pay for the murder of children?
Right.
Or would you rather go to prison? Would you murder a child or would you go to prison? Right. You know, you have to come to a point where you have to say I don't want to go to prison, but it's a very real I don't know what I was going to say. It's something that you have to come to terms with.
Right.
You know, you may have to spend some time in prison, but it's not likely that that's going to happen. But what our government does is so vicious. What the United States government does is so vicious.
Mm-hmm.
It's so monstrous. It's beyond any kind of serial killer or anything that we can even imagine. Mm-hmm. And I am not going to pay for it. I'm not going to fund that. I'm not going to use a penny of my money. I told, what's Ruth Ben's partner's name? Ed?
Yeah.
I told Ed, maybe I'll just tell him I'll pay him $5 a month or something. He goes, do you want $5 a month going towards things that you don't believe in?
Right. You
know, even that much. And so yeah, it sometimes like I worry a little bit about my resistance about what's going to happen, but mostly I can look at myself in the mirror. I can like myself because for how many decades I didn't want to pay for this. I actually, like I told you, funded the murder of my son and millions of other people with you know, my hard-earned earnings or whatever. And people like Donald Trump don't pay. People like General Electric, who profit off of war, not only do they not pay taxes, they get refunds.
Right.
So how long are we going to allow ourselves to be used?
Yep.
And abused by this system?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, so that's my story.
Yeah. That's powerful. Thank you for, you know, I hadn't heard all of it all the way through. So that's, it's powerful hearing it. Yeah, that's pretty amazing that the judge said, I do not think it's unreasonable for you to have that response.
Right. It was totally, and it was like a million pounds just got lifted off of me.
Right. To actually have your experience confirmed. Yeah.
So that brings us to another question. Ruth told me recently that you've been seeing a lot of increased interest to war tax resistance since the new regime came in power. And to me, that makes me happy, but it also makes me angry because yeah. Barack Obama bragged yep. about being at war every second he was president.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that's important for people to remember is that in some ways, especially for folks on the left, a veil has been lifted where liberals are able to somehow see white supremacy and see imperialism and warmongering more clearly with the election of Donald Trump. And that is nothing new, and that it is, yes, it's an escalation, it is an escalation of these systems. And it's more blatant and in your face, but you're right. You're exactly right that Obama, was at war every single day of the presidency.
But he bragged about it.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And escalated drone warfare and was, deported millions of people, so, that everything that we're seeing, Donald Trump already employing is a system that was in place. It's not as though, Homeland Security and ICE here in this country or the U.S. military appeared overnight. These systems
right.
Were in full order and operating 100% plus, last year. And so I think that's the piece around war tax resistance is that we're really trying to kind of welcome this new wave to the movement while also really holding that space for saying that this is not a problem of the Republicans. This is the Democrats. This is the entire, across the board, we're seeing policies enacted that are killing people in our streets here at home and killing people in streets overseas. So that's kind of the two elements there that I think really need to be emphasized. One is, yes, welcome to the movement, but also don't leave. Right. If a Democrat's in power, this is a struggle that needs to be maintained. And really that political education, that it's not Republican versus Democrat. It is calling out the entire system.
Right. As far as I know, this is the War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee. And as far as I know, Trump hasn't started any new wars, but he hasn't ended any of the old ones either. So before we leave, we have a few more minutes. I'd like you to give any websites or ways to contact the organization or you. And it will be in the blog. All the links will be in the blog I write about this show too.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. So our website is nwtrcc.org, newtrick.org. You can also find us on Facebook under National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, on Twitter as well. And right now, in the coming weeks, this Saturday, I'm leading a webinar on our redirection this year, which for those who are just joining, we are, as war tax resistors across the country, there are many different communities that are choosing to not only refuse taxes to the U.S. government, but redirect that money to resistance that's led by Black folks, brown people, and indigenous people. So I'm going to be leading a webinar on that this Saturday afternoon, You can RSVP online, find the links on Facebook or our website. And there's also another webinar coming up on March 4th, led by a longtime war tax resister, Dave Gross, who is doing a War Tax Resistance 101 webinar. So if you are interested in learning more about the logistics and techniques and strategies and philosophies of war tax resistance, and how you can get involved, those are two great places to go for information online.
Well, Sam Kaplinko-Lair, thank you so much for being on The People Speak with me, Cindy Sheehan. And we have 1 minute left, and I quickly want to share this with everybody. Today is the 59th birthday of the peace symbol. Gerald Herbert Holtham created it on February 21st, 1958. Using semaphore signals for the letters N for nuclear and D for disarmament for Britain's first major demonstration against nuclear weapons. Well, like we've been saying, for the last 59 years, this country, the United States, has been at war. It's increased its nuclear weapons arsenal. It has started to increase or maybe foment another Cold War with Russia. So how about, instead of using the peace symbol as a fashion statement, why don't we start doing things that are less symbolic and more real, like withholding our war taxes against the United States government? I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The People Speak on BBS Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Sam, and we'll talk again. Be back on the air next week on Tuesday from 6 to 7 Pacific time.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you. Good luck on your webinars. I hope to see you in St. Louis in May.
Yes, see you there.
Good night, everybody.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.